From inside Erstad Recordings in Peekskill, New York, welcome to A Thousand Exits, a podcast at the corner of martial arts and life's journey.
Here we share our insights into training and talk to those that have shaped our daily practice.
We explore what the martial arts mean to us on a personal level and discuss their broader impact on society and culture. Our passion is the common person's experience in the martial arts.
Bend your legs, plant your feet, relax, and let's go.
Hey Paco, how's it going?
Very good, Dan. How are you?
I'm good. This is a new experience. This is our first podcast, right?
Indeed. And I have to say, being here at Erstad Recordings is an incredible experience for me. Never been in a recording studio before. This is incredible.
I'm glad. Yeah. Well, we spent a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort to make the place soundproof. And the great irony is that today, of all days, there's a construction crew literally pounding nails into the outside of the building, causing it to be not soundproof.
So to our listeners, if you hear the pounding, we're not being attacked. Not an opportunity to use our kung fu skills.
Right.
It's just the people working outside.
That's how it goes. You don't always get perfection, but that's how it goes, and you just keep going.
But you put a lot of work into this. I actually had the great honor to see it evolve.
Yeah.
Because you're my good friend, and it's incredible what you've achieved. So, congrats.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we started with a ratty old garage. Floor was completely uneven, broken up, messed up concrete, holes in the wall, and we stripped the whole thing down, built a whole building within a building, and it's super quiet, super fun, and we've been kind of building out the gear list and getting musicians booked in and ready and everything like that. So it's been a really good experience.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So why are we here? What's the name of our podcast?
The name of our podcast is A Thousand Exits.
Why are we calling it that?
Yeah. So that is a very interesting thing. Like, we want to suggest something and it's not an obvious theme. So we want our listeners to think a little bit about why are we calling it that. But one of the reasons we're calling it that, among potentially many others, is that when we practice the martial arts, we learn ways, we use drills as platforms to start becoming free. And as we do that, we learn ways to quote-unquote exit, which is use what you're doing to end the situation.
Huh.
And that could be, for example, an attack, an opponent that you have to defeat or you have to neutralize.
Yeah, because when you're like toe-to-toe with someone, even in a drill, someone like we practice together all the time, so we know each other pretty well now, and we always do Wing Chun drills, so we're working within that context. But when you're toe-to-toe with anyone, their body presents a structure, and it has certain obstacles up in the way for you, obstacles that can either hurt you or obstacles defending you from defending them from you hurting them. So you have to find an exit. You have to find a solution.
Correct.
In the moment, and it's unplanned. It's spontaneous. But are we just giving away the answer to what this podcast title is about?
Well, we'll keep developing it, but that's one of the meanings.
Okay.
And a very interesting thing there that I think we're going to be talking often is how, for us, drills are platforms to evolve. And I don't know that everybody and all the various schools of martial arts and all the various lineages have that, or at least aware.
Right.
They may not be aware of that. So for us, a drill is not something that we robotically learn to do, but is a platform that allows us to learn to coordinate the body in a way that starts responding. Those responses we call exits.
Right. And do you think like the idea of a drill being a platform to evolve from is something that most martial arts would share that idea? I would think so. I would think that like even if you're a boxer or something and you, throw a certain set of combinations and you do that a million times in your life to refine and perfect that, I would imagine that in their mind is still the idea of evolving that practice of throwing that combination, knowing when to throw it, how fast,
yeah,
or what kind of timing to have. But I guess it's nice to sort of state that drills are an opportunity for evolution as a conscious intention going into the drill.
Right.
You know, rather than just saying, this is the drill we're doing, but knowing that, you know, the drill's going to change, we're going to change in the process of practicing it.
Yeah. And if I may add, one thing you just said about the boxer, which is common to a lot of the martial arts and how we practice to acquire skill, even though we in this podcast will talk about all the martial arts from the various parts of the planet, we like this Chinese martial art, and a lot of people call that Kung Fu. in general. The word kung fu is really means skill achieved through hard work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my original teacher said it meant time and effort.
Very good.
Yeah.
So this idea of
and
effort,
I guess that translates to skill.
Yeah, and through hard work.
Yeah.
But the skill is really why we do what we do. And another theme that I believe will be recurring in these episodes, in this podcast, is what we do with the goal of developing skill. It's not that if we were going to have a fight, it would have to look exactly like that. Mm. The goal is not to act in a particular way. That's a crystallization that Bruce Lee was so against.
Right.
The goal is to develop a skill. When, if, and when we have to use it, and that's not really the goal. Hopefully we don't use it.
Hopefully you never use it.
Yeah. You'll just have a skill, and it'll express itself.
Yeah. So when we were talking about doing this first episode, we thought it'd be a good idea to sort of introduce ourselves to the listeners. And one of the ways we could do that is by asking each other questions. So Francis suggested, or Paco suggested, that we come up with five. So did you want to start, or should I fire some at you?
You ask me one.
Okay. So, well, first question is, where are you from?
I am from Madrid, Spain, where I grew up. And I have lived in Spain, in North Africa, in India. I lived in the Western United States when I was a kid. And about 15 years, I settled in the New York area where I live.
Okay. And this is part of my first question, by the way. So this is a sub question to my first question. What was Spain like growing up there? What was your environment like?
Yeah, that is a good question. Because I was born in the 70s, Spain was a very different country, probably very different than any other country in Europe at that time, and certainly very different than the United States. Spain was technically still under this dictatorship, and by the time I was a little kid, it was coming out of it. So that meant that it was closed to external influence for many, many years. We were at least 20 years behind Europe, 30 years behind the United States.
Is it a situation like in East Germany where, you know, people might smuggle in jeans and cassette tapes of musicians from outside of the country? Was it that restrictive?
It was very restrictive. We didn't have anything that didn't pass a very, very strict censorship. Only what the government, which was this dictatorship, allowed in that didn't have any message that they didn't want. So on the other hand, there was no poverty. Everybody had the basic needs covered. Mm. So it's a very funny situation. But I didn't really experience the dictatorship. I experienced what it was, a transition to the democracy, which is a very difficult thing. Crime was rising up really fast.
Mm.
And it's very related to why I got into the martial arts. Mm. The other interesting thing is we didn't have martial arts other than the basic ones. You couldn't find anything that wasn't judo and karate.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, just as a side note, whenever we get around to telling my side of that story, I also had a similar thing about how difficult it is to find martial arts other than kind of the basic two or three.
Right. Exactly. And that's what happened. When I was a young kid, I joined a school of Kenpo. And that was the very first non-judo, non-karate, and non-taekwondo school in the country, right? And Kenpo only had that one school in the entire country, not just the city of Madrid.
Yeah.
So it was a novelty, which is probably why I joined it. So it was very restrictive.
Yeah. So this is still part of my first question. But
that's amazing. What,
so I'm going to get like 15 in the end because I have sub-questions.
That's
but,
good.
So what was the motivating force behind you getting into martial arts? What, when and why did it come to you? And why did you say, you know, this is something I really want to do?
Yeah.
Like, what brought you there? And then what was it about the martial? This is my second question. What brought you?
Second question.
What brought you to the point where you felt you needed to learn a martial art? And why was it martial arts that spoke to you so deeply?
Yeah. So I guess it was, I had two motivations. When I was a very young kid, my father, and, you know, I do want to have the chance, another episode to honor him, because he definitely was a very strong influence on me. And he planted a seed of the love for the martial arts, and he was a big fan of Bruce Lee. This is very interesting because my father grew up in a very small village of southern Spain. You would have mentioned the name of, you know, an actor, Cary Grant, to my father. He wouldn't know who you're talking about. Yet Bruce Lee, not only he knew,
interesting,
but he admired and respected, right? And he planted that seed of love for Bruce Lee in me, and there was no Wing Chun. I read what I could, but we had very few books. And it was one of the drivers to get into the martial arts because of that seed that he had planted. On the other hand, when I was a teenager, crime was rising in Madrid. And I know people today see Spain as a, you know, very nice place to visit, one of the best vacation spots. But for me, it was rough. Madrid was going through a hard transition. We got, all of a sudden, we got drugs. All of a sudden, we got people on the street. And when I was a teenager and my habits, I was walking down the streets late at night. And many, many times, they came for my money. Hmm. I got robbed. I got threatened with knives. I got a punch in the stomach, left in the street.
Yeah, so it actually did escalate to be physical. It wasn't just a verbal
Absolutely. thing. Many, many times. I had a knife on my neck. I had a syringe with HIV. That was actually the most common thing at a particular point. It was horrible.
Yeah.
So the martial arts did literally save my life. And it's not like I got into a fight and I acted like Bruce Lee. They did give me the confidence to stand up and to say, no, I'm not giving you my money. And you know what? Those people didn't want to have a fight.
Yeah, interesting.
It's not a negotiation that they wanted to do because what's the point?
Right.
They're after the money, so they go look for someone else. So in that sense, it changed my life, and sure. That was the beginning of it.
Sure, sure, yeah. Okay, that's my intro questions for you.
Wonderful.
Well, that's my intro first two questions for you.
Well, so we do want to hear, and the listeners want to hear, your martial arts journey.
Okay, yeah. So it's sort of, I feel like it'll mirror kind of what you said in terms of, I should say, where I'm from, and then what brought me to martial arts as well. I was born outside of Chicago and then moved to the Los Angeles area when I was about 8, 9 years old. So I really grew up in the Los Angeles area. But it was just a small suburb of Los Angeles. It wasn't, you know, like Compton, or it was a very safe area, statistically speaking. But kind of in a similar way, but much less dramatic and I would think traumatic than your situation. But, I was also sort of like a victim of bullying. And I think at that time, when I was younger in middle school, grade school, middle school, and then I pretty much stopped after middle school. I don't really know why the kids in school picked on me. You know, I was kind of a quiet kid. I had friends, but they coincidentally never had like the same lunch as me. You know, we had that staggered lunch system where for some reason all of your friends have lunch A and you have lunch B. And so I would just kind of wander around the school, and for no reason, there are various groups of kids that would bully me. And I think it more than anything that time in my life, I kind of had this question of, you know, why were people like that? Or why does that sort of thing exist? I didn't understand. I wasn't doing anything to provoke it. But I clearly felt that, like, you know, I came to some kind of awareness that the world wasn't a perfect place, that you could be the victim of violence for no reason and unprovoked. You don't have to do anything, but violence can come to you. And I think when I started realizing that, probably for, you know, many years, I was interested in trying to find some way to empower myself. I didn't know what that was. I wasn't ever the type to join a gang or bring a weapon to school, although a few of my friends kind of got into these pretend gangs, you know. Although the real heavy hitters were in Compton and L.A., but we, you know, we were still rambunctious kids, and you know, all the dudes wanted to also be in gangs in our little suburbs, so they made pretend gangs to try to be tough guys. But that was never my nature. So I never carried weapons. I never joined gangs. And so I think at some point I started getting into the martial arts kind of casually, just goofing around with people, but it was never a meaningful thing to me. And then I was in Texas, where some of my family is. And this must have been at the end of middle school, early beginning of high school. And for some reason, my parents let me go to the movies alone. And there was a movie that came out about Bruce Lee. It was called Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story. Mm-hmm. And it starred Jason Scott Lee as Bruce Lee. And that movie totally changed my life. I mean, not only was his performance and the film captivating and magnetic, or his performance was magnetic and the film was captivating, it just told even the kind of fictional portrayal of Bruce Lee's story told me that it was possible to change my outlook and in life and therefore the outcome of my life. It's possible to empower oneself through, like you're saying, time and effort, hard work, that if you dedicate yourself almost with an obsessive degree of focus, you could transform what was a weak body and a weak mind into a strong body and a strong mind. And, you know, I've always had a pretty good physicality and I was always pretty good at sports, but it didn't translate to not being bullied. Like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
even though I'm like a big enough guy, it was more the mentality I had inside that made me a target for bullying. So I saw this Dragon Bruce Lee story and it just completely changed me. I bought the soundtrack. I worked out to
That's
it.
Good.
I was trying to find martial arts, you know, and I'll be a little more specific than yours just because my story is at that point. But so in Los Angeles at that time for me, it was the same thing. There was only Taekwondo and I think that was it. There was one Kenpo school, one Taekwondo school, maybe a Hapkido school somewhere, but that was basically it. And I knew that I wanted to do what Bruce Lee did, but it wasn't around.
Right.
So I would like sort of spar with my friends and learn about their martial arts. I had a couple of friends that were black belts in Taekwondo and I always enjoyed sparring with them. But I always had a feeling that the mechanics that they were showing me weren't what I was looking for. And so I wanted to find my own martial arts teacher. And as absolute luck would have it, I opened up the Yellow Pages. I found a listing for Kung Fu for self-defense.
That's incredible.
About 10 miles away. And it was a Wing Chun teacher. And we can get more into our history specifically later. But what a coincidence that 10 minutes away was an actual Wing Chun teacher, you know, the martial art that Bruce Lee studied, and called him up. We hit it off. I started taking lessons and it just sparked a lifelong love for it. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah. So that's kind of a long answer to, you know,
I love it. But. Yeah. No, that's great journey. Thank you very much for that. And do you have any opinion on the state of the martial arts community today? And is there anything that the average martial artist can do to contribute to it?
Huh. That's interesting. That's a pretty broad question. I don't really know what the state is. Maybe you can tell us more about what the state of the martial arts community is, because I feel like it's really changed since when I first started practicing, I'm sure when you did, where the martial arts, when you conceived of them back then, it was like Karate Kid. It was like a dojo with a teacher and you would go in and do group classes. And actually, when I found my Wing Chun teacher, that was a really nice surprise, which he was just in his garage. No belts, no fancy anything. It was just private lessons one-on-one with him. So I got a chance to experience something a little different. But I still think 20 years ago, most people thought of the martial arts as like dojos and belt systems. And then when you would think about martial arts, it would be tied up with all this Eastern mysticism and, you know, kung fu movies, martial arts action movies. But now with the emergence of MMA, I feel like what the term martial arts conveys is something really different.
Right.
Like it doesn't mean just dojos anymore. Now it means like hardcore physical training, people doing BJJ on mats and Thai kickboxing and merging them all together and training to fight in rings. And that's part of martial arts too. So I don't really have a sense for what people would think about when they think about martial arts. I would imagine young kids now probably only think about MMA.
Correct, yeah.
I wouldn't think that they would think about Aikido and like gentle old Japanese guys flipping people around with little lock throws or, you know, wrist throws. So, you know, and what was the question? Do I have any idea of what
people can do to contribute to the evolution of the martial arts?
Well, I think that what you do is good. I mean, I think that like if it's something you're passionate about and you think about it, is to have the kind of conversations that we have. Just in that sense, we cover a lot of ground, you know, responsibility in martial arts. What does it mean to test and prove your skill in martial art? And then how does that interact with the world around you? You know, we'll get into all these topics as this podcast goes on. But I think conversation is good. And I think having casual exchanges of hands with people not in your system or style is good, and doing it really joyfully, respectfully. Mm-hmm. Like, I can remember when I was in college, I was doing Wing Chun, and I met a guy who did Bagua. And, you know, here I was, I thought with my fast hands and stuff, I was like an unstoppable fighting machine. And to some extent, that would have been true with him in like maybe a no holds barred situation. But in a sparring situation, the minute he got close to me, oh man, all that chi and all that force just locked me down and shut me down. So I learned a lot from that. And we would talk and grow. And so I think just engaging in positive conversations with people, positive training sessions, and just trying to remember that, you know, we all have an interest in it for whatever reason. And, you know, everyone's doing something they're interested in. So if you have a positive outlook on your martial art, they have a positive outlook on theirs, and to connect at that level, you know. Yeah, what about you?
So, you know, to connect this question with something you said earlier, when we were talking about our previous practices and the various schools that we went through, the difference between practicing in a dojo, formal dojo with belts versus with your teacher in the basement, it's very different, right? When, there is a tendency as you evolve in the practice to consider what you're doing now better, and it's good if you feel thankful for it, because that's a beautiful thing. It'll bring the best out of you. But one thing that has happened to me is when I look back, I see a lot of lessons in what I was doing that I might not have realized back then. So when I was a kid, my Kenpo school was a traditional school. Maybe there were 15 kids there, you know, punching the air when the sensei said so. And you look at that and say, well, what is that compared to what we can do now to train with our teacher one-on-one and get 2 hours of training in his basement and personal attention? But I look back at those years, and there were a lot of lessons there. And the system that I practice, even though I grew in a different direction, does not diminish that. It doesn't mean it was it's just my particular journey, my particular path took me where I am now. But I look back and I am very, very thankful for the lessons that I learned. And hopefully through these podcasts, we will explore a lot of those lessons.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it would even be very nice to bring back some of those people that they're still around and get their points of view. They were very influential in my life. And the truth is, it had a lot of value. It had a lot of value. And I think the evolution of the martial arts into a system that allows you to be honest with yourself, that allows you to see it as, how can I continue finding those holes and improving my development? It's a priceless thing. If you think about what it means for a human being to find an endeavor that makes you want to be honest with yourself instead of covering yourself with insecurity, and that...
Yeah, and one thing, I don't want to interrupt except to say that I think one reason martial arts is special and why it does what you're talking about is because it's rooted in the body.
Exactly.
There are so many mental games and intellectual games people can play with themselves and others. But when you're doing something physical in a way, you can either do it or not. I mean, there's a lot of gray area in between. But being confronted with your body's limitations all the time, I think
that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
It's basically very honest because it's rooted in your body.
Yeah.
And what you and I practice is called body mechanics, applied body mechanics.
Right, right.
And it's a very beautiful name because it really is very easy to see whether it's working or not. You basically use it against non-cooperative or some resistance.
Yeah.
And you see. And that allows you to be more honest. Now, it's not easy from an ego standpoint. You have to be okay with not doing it right and taking many years to get somewhere. But it's a real development, and it's not make-believe. It's not a bubble of insecurity. And it's an incredible thing that it's done for me.
Yeah, and why do you think that the ego is so plays such a big part in martial arts? I don't know if it's because it's connected to the idea of combat, and that martial arts ultimately circle back to combat and conflict or self-defense. But I think I've always responded pretty similarly to you, which is anytime that I've touched hands with someone that was better than me, I always got a lot of joy out of that. I always felt that, oh, I could learn a lot from this person. And, you know, by the time I got to, you know, our teacher, George, and applied body mechanics, I thought, well, you know, I had practiced Wing Chun off and on for many years and thought I had a certain level of skill. And then I touched hands with George, and it was like I mean, I just had no skill. There, right. I had nothing that exactly. I could do. And I thought that was so cool. And I really felt like, wow, like this feels like the real deal. And I think I can practice with this person and learn a lot. Coincidentally, also someone in their basement, no belts, no sashes, no nothing special. So I want to kind of shift it a little just to say that, to reiterate that this podcast is going to be about all martial arts and our experiences with that. But at some point, whether we do it in this podcast or the next one, it's fair for us to have a moment to say what we practice in specific, which is Wing Chun. And I think that would be a question I would ask you right now, my third question on the list.
Okay, you get a third one?
Yeah. What is it about Wing Chun specifically that drew you to it, and why Wing Chun versus what you had experienced in the past? And that's not an invitation to dog on other martial arts. No. It's just some people like BJJ, and it's like there's something about that captivates them. So what is it about Wing Chun to you that makes it your art and not something else?
Right. Excellent question. Thank you so much. So it's a combination of things. To begin with, one very important thing to say is that while I do have admiration and respect for many, many systems, as I look back into my various practices, it not always connected at the same level. In this particular practice I do now with my teacher, something clicks. I feel at home. Hmm. So we can call it Wing Chun, but when I look out there on what's called Wing Chun, there's a lot of variety in the system.
Right.
So I should say what I learned from my teacher, which he happens to call Wing Chun. We might as well call it George Chuang. I like to say that.
Right.
There is a click in me. Something clicks in me, and it feels very scientific. I am kind of skinny and small. I'm not strong. I'm the opposite of strong. Maybe that word is weak. And the system makes me feel alive in that there is a science, a body mechanics science behind it. And for the first time, right, in my entire martial arts journey, I started to understand that Kung Fu can be this art of getting a little bit of leverage from physics. And that had never happened before, not in my Kenpo practice, not in my Krav Maga practice. But it's not that I blame those systems. I might not have had the maturity, or I might not have had the alignment with my teacher. I also was at another Wing Chun school before that. And I didn't feel that either, even though we called it Wing Chun.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. So something clicks. It feels very scientific. And it's leading me to knowing myself better. Because how I know when I'm putting the elbow in a certain place, bracing myself in a certain way, it's working against that resistance. And when I don't do that, it doesn't work. So you get to that self-knowledge, integrating the mind and the body. That had never happened to me before.
Interesting. Yeah.
And that is what I'm after. We can call it Wing Chun or not. He just happens to call it Wing Chun.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. I mean, I feel like anyone who listens to this podcast will see over time that we're kind of coming from two different standpoints of how we think about martial arts. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun committing some of these thoughts to tape, because they're very different. I mean, like everything you describe, there are elements that I can say I relate to, but then elements that I have either never thought about or are the opposite of like
what I
relate to in it. You know, so that's, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And especially when we bring in guests from other, you know, art forms, and to kind of,
which we definitely want to do.
Yeah, which we definitely want to do. And we'll be digging deeper into their art form with them. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to see what that's about, you know?
Yes.
All right. So where are we? Are we doing more questions? Are we happy with this introduction to Paco and Dan and the Thousand Exits podcast?
So what type of content are you looking to bring to this podcast? So let's give a taste of the future to our listeners.
Oh, that's great. That's great, because we've had some conversations about this, and you know, the martial arts could be a very wide open thing. Some of the things we've talked about is doing very small segments where we might have just had a training session, and then maybe we have a breakthrough or an insight or a question, and so maybe we would do a short episode on those issues and what the breakthrough might have been, and describe it and see if other people maybe have similar types of breakthroughs in their training. So that might be one type of segment we do. We might do segments where we review martial arts movies or any other kind of cultural context, maybe museum exhibits, things, just basically how does the martial arts world interact with broader society and right. culture. And then I think most importantly, just talking with other martial artists from all over the spectrum. And I think, you know, martial artists for me could be everything from fencing, boxing, you know, judo, jujitsu, karate, right. taekwondo, like the entire spectrum. Just talking with practitioners of all of these different areas, you know, what's their training like? Why do they love it? Why do they keep doing it? I also think just to learn, it would be interesting to see, like, can they boil down their practice, their combat practice, into three principles? What
right.
If I was going to be a boxer, what are the three things that I would always have to be thinking
right.
about?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the kind of thing I want to know from other people. So I think, we'll also be sharing our thoughts, our experiences in a broader sense. But I think maybe we'll have three or maybe four different types of shows
yes.
that we do. Does that sound right
Absolutely.
To you?
And one thing I'd like to say for our listeners, I think we want to make this a home to represent the common person's journey in the martial arts. So yes, there are shows and podcasts out there where the great masters are invited to
right,
speak.
Right.
My interest, and I believe yours too, is that person who doesn't have and will never have a name, will never be a person in Wing Chun Illustrated, or I don't know if Black Belt magazine still exists, the common person that works 50, 60, 70 hours a week and yet finds time after 10 years of practice to keep practicing, that will never maybe be a teacher. Or if they're teachers, they're not renowned. Those people I'm interested in. Let's give them a voice. Let's bring them here and see why they keep doing it. What is it that they find that their lives are made better and more meaningful through the practice of the martial arts?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I also think, you know, there are also ways to broaden even that definition. I think a lot of times people don't think about the fact that there are people doing martial arts with disabilities.
Good. Yeah.
People in hard-hitting sports that are women. And what is that like? Now it's much more common. But when I first started,
yeah.
it wasn't common. And so, you know, what is it like with that sort of cultural and physical context to do martial arts? So I think there's a lot to explore, you know, as long as we get out there, you know, what do they say? You know, hit the pavement
yep.
and, you know, try to find some interesting people to talk to. I think we each probably have a handful of people that we could bring on right away. That would be a lot of fun, but I think it's going to be also a lot of fun just keeping an ear out
exactly
for someone who practices and say, hey, you know, hey, I've enjoyed talking with you. Would you want to come do a podcast episode? Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary.
Yeah.
I mean, do we feel like we know who we are, each other? Like, you know, if you had just heard this thing that we did, would you feel like you know who Paco and Dan are?
I think enough for the first episode, but also want to leave some mystery, right?
Yeah,
so for
yeah.
the listeners to unravel
yeah.
later on.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more to dive into, a lot more specifics and details, but this was just a nice way to say hello, to introduce ourselves and give people a sense of what this podcast is going to be about.
Perfect. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Hey, thanks everyone for listening. Once again, this is the 1000 Exits podcast. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.